Perfect.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 5, Text 7. Samyak vidharyatam bala guru gehe guru kula. Did I miss something? Okay. I didn't hear any sound that's coming in. Dvi jatibi Vishnu pakshai Patichanai Nabhidyita Asya Di Yata. Samyag vidharyatam balo guru gehe dvijatibi Vishnu praksai patichanair nabidye tasya diryata. Samyag vidharyatam balo Guru Gehe Dvijatibi Vishnu Prakshai Patichanair Nabhidyetasya Diryata Samyag Vidharyatam Balo Guru Gehe Dvijatibi Vishnu Prakshaya Patichanair Nabhidye Tasya Diryata. Please chant. Ladies.
Thank you.
Samyak, completely. Vidharyatam, let him be protected. Balaha, this boy of tender age. Guru Gehe, in the Guru Kula, the place where children are sent to be instructed by the Guru. Dvi Jati B, by Brahmins, Vishnu Pakshai, who are on the side of Vishnu. Prati Chanai, disguised in different dresses. Nabidyita, may not be influenced. Asya, of him. The intelligence. Yata, so that. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki. Excuse me. Translation. Hiranyakasipu advised his assistants, "My dear demons, give complete protection to this boy at the Gurukul, where he is instructed, so that his intelligence will not be further influenced by Vaishnavas who may go there in disguise." Please repeat. Hiranyakasipu advised his assistants, "My dear demons, give complete protection to this boy at the Gurukul, where he is instructed, so that his intelligence will not be further influenced by Vaishnavas who may go there in disguise." Purport. In our Krishna consciousness movement, the tactic of dressing oneself like an ordinary karmi is necessary because everyone in the demoniac kingdom is against the Vaishnav teachings. I should mention that what I'm reading now was written in the early 70s, I believe. And the current or mood or atmosphere has changed somewhat. And although at that time there was a great wave of hostility against the devotees, it was very strong. It was shown on the news, in the newspapers. It was just a general feeling that Hare Krishnas are bad for various reasons, which I'll get into. So Srila Prabhupada is actually, in this purport, responding to that which was existing at that time. And as I said, to a small extent even at this time, but much less than it did at that time. In our Krishna consciousness movement, the tactic of dressing oneself like an ordinary karmi is necessary because everyone in the demoniac kingdom is against the Vaishnav teachings. Krishna consciousness is not at all to the liking of the demons of the present age. As soon as they see a Vaishnav dressed in saffron garments with beads on his neck and tilak on his forehead, they are immediately irritated. They criticize the Vaishnavas by sarcastically saying Hare Krishna, and some people also chant Hare Krishna sincerely. In either case, since Hare Krishna is absolute, whether one chants it jokingly or sincerely, it will have its effect, good effect. The Vaishnavas are pleased when the demons chant Hare Krishna because this shows that the Hare Krishna movement is taking ground. The greater demons, like Hiranyakashipu, are always prepared to chastise the Vaishnavas, and they try to make arrangements so that Vaishnavas will not come to sell their books and preach Krishna consciousness. During those days that I just mentioned, as some of you may remember, at the airports, there were actually bands of people who were organized to what we call bust-up sales. We would be preaching to a person and encouraging the person to take the book, and the person was sold on the book, and just as he put his hand in his pocket to take out his wallet, three people would descend upon him and say, "Don't buy that book. It's bad. It's evil. It's of the devil." And we would get that. Fortunately, there were other devotees in the airport distributing, and they were not being affected or disturbed. But that's often what happened. They didn't want people to buy the books, to read the books, because of whatever fears they had, whatever hostilities they had, which I will get into in a few moments. Thus, what was done by Hiranyakasipu long, long ago is still being done. That is the way of materialistic life. Demons or materialists do not at all like the advancement of Krishna consciousness, and they try to hinder it in many ways. Yet, the preachers of Krishna consciousness must go forward in their Vaishnava dress or any other dress for the purpose of preaching. Chanakya Pandit says that if an honest person deals with a great cheater, it is necessary for him to become a cheater also, not for the purpose of cheating, but to make his preaching successful. Omagyanati marangasya gananjana shalakaya chakshur unmulitam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet and beg for his mercy that I may be able to say something beneficial to all of us today so that we can achieve the lofty goal of pure love of God. I smell something burning. Anybody smell that? Maybe you ought to check that out. It smells like carbon or sulfur. Okay. Gas. Maybe the demons are trying to gas us out. Okay. This is a... it's a very important, very... directed verse, and it's true that there was quite a bit of hostility, or hatred, animosity towards devotees in the early days. Everybody didn't dislike us, but many, many did. There are reasons why people dislike someone who looks foreign, or someone who looks exotic, or is dressed differently, or possibly speaks differently, or does things, for example, chanting on the street, which was not done by anybody, to my recollection, until we came on the streets, pretty much took them over with the sound of Hare Krishna. And so this was different. And many people who are fixed in their habits and fixed in their ways, they don't like to see different. It kind of scares them, especially if they don't understand it, they don't know it, and they feel it's somehow a threat to their false security, which they have. They feel very comfortable in the way things are. But as soon as they see, as I mentioned, something different, how could it be good? Look at them, dressed in bed sheets. What could be good about that? And with this paint all over their faces. Where do they come from? The wild jungles? You know, this is the thoughts running through their heads. Generally, an intelligent person will say, before I commit myself to making some offensive statement, let me find out a little bit about why they're doing this, what this is about. But a person who doesn't have such intelligence will just start making all sorts of assumptions and justify his natural prejudices. There are reasons why people have hatred. Some are just born with hatred. They come from the lowest of planets and they come up here to give people their bad karma. That's their only business. And they come up and they're filled with hatred. And you see this as when they're children. I've seen this. And maybe some of you all have seen it. There are some children who will deliberately, intentionally, and joyfully step on ants, step on beetles, take little worms and cut them up and throw them in the air. We'll take a rope, put it around a cat's neck, and then hang it from a tree. And while the cat is meowing and screaming, the little child is screaming with laughter and happiness. So this is the happiness of a demoniac mentality. And there are many people who are born like that. And Hiranyakasipu is a bit of that. He's a bit of another kind also. He's a combination, which I'll get into. But that is the inherent type of demon. Born bad, they are the people who often become our serial killers, our murderers, our rapists, people who have no compassion, they have no feeling, their conscience is virtually dulled to almost zero. And they come in, as I said, to give people their bad karma. Well, Krishna is not going to use somebody good. He's not going to use any one of you to destroy somebody, to harm somebody, to hurt somebody, to hate somebody, because you don't want to do that. You want to serve him. You want to love him. You want to adore him. You want to spread his glories. But so he can't use you to give people their bad karmas. He has to use somebody, though. So he allows these demoniac personalities to come up from lower planetary systems who have no conscience and who do what they do. Then there are another type of person who develops hatred. He grows his hatred. Comes from a family where all they do is complain and hate. This is bad, and that's bad, and he's bad, and she's bad, and everything is bad. And so the child grows up with in a climate or an atmosphere of hostility, so that he takes this hostility out into the streets, into his school, and he generates hatred because that is his acquired nature now, to express his hatred, to look for faults in persons who may have such faults, but he doesn't see the virtues. He doesn't see anything helpful. He doesn't see anything good in this person. Sees only the bad. That's how he's been trained, and that's how he will see, for example, Hare Krishnas. They must be bad. Look at them. They're foreign. They're chanting in a foreign language. Who needs them? We want Americans, good old white Americans. I mean, this, you have people, for example, like the neo-Nazis. They love to hate. If they can't find someone to hate, their day is ruined. Their day is made by finding some object of hate. Neo-Nazis, white supremacists, many different groups which are hate groups. And they come together because they all have that similar quality or that similar characteristic of hate. And so, as they say, birds of a feather flock together, so the birds of hatred flock together and leash their venom upon the world wherever they can. And they take it further than just verbal. They often accompany it by actions. They burn down churches, burn down synagogues, throw Molotov cocktails into homes of people who happen to be religious. They're demoniac. So that's another type. A third type is that a person who hates as a result of revenge. Now, Hiranyakasipu falls into this type as well as the inherent type. Hiranyakasipu got pleasure out of destroying, killing Brahmins, out of ordering the Vaishnav demigods to do this, that, and the other thing, to chastise them, to give them reprisals, to unjustifiably harm them if necessary. That was his pleasure, to prove to himself that he's the Lord of all this material universe. And he was the Lord outside of course, Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and Lord Vishnu. No one was as powerful as him. So he would continuously boss the demigods around, as I said, chastise them, reproach them, find fault with them, for no other reason than to prove to himself that no one can defeat me. Look at them. They do what I say. Even Narada Muni says that he was under the order of Hiranyakasipu. Suffice it to say, he didn't have to be. He was playing along with the pastime. Narada Muni is very powerful. He's the pure devotee of the Lord, and there is nothing that the Lord will not do for him, because everything he wants or does is good, and it comes from the guidance of the Lord. But he was playing the part. This is a pastime. And so even he appeared to be fearful. He mentions that in the previous pages. So those are the three types. The inherent type, the type that develops it in his from his childhood to parents or associates, and those who develop the revenge. Now, Hiranyakashipu had a tremendous amount of revenge for Lord Vishnu because Lord Vishnu killed his brother. Now, Hiranyakashipu is a materialist. A materialist loves his body, thinks the all in all of his body. He's identified himself with his body, and he identifies himself with anything that is connected with or attached to, or a part of his body. So his brother, Hiranyaksha, was a part of his body. They were twins. They grew up together. And, you know, brothers, they grow up together. They have fun. They play together. They have club fighting together. They go out hunting together. There's a certain camaraderie that comes from having a brother, which gives a great amount of pleasure. Some of you here, how many of you have brothers? Brothers. So you all know what I'm talking about. When you grow up, there's a certain amount. Yes, there are arguments and little spites and little fights here and there. But at heart, brothers tend to work together. And if somebody comes to attack them, they all band together and they get the attack. They go after the attacker. So there's a camaraderie, there's a joyfulness, there's a pleasure in having a brother and in being with a brother and in acting with a brother. And Hiranyakashipu was now bereft of his brother, bereft of the pleasure that his brother gave him. Well, that's like cutting off your arm. If your arm gives you pleasure, then you're going to feel vengeance or hostility towards the person who cut off your arm, because your arm was the means by which you perhaps gave yourself pleasure through feeding yourself or whatever you did with your arm. So there, in accounts for, to some degree, the hatred of Hiranyakashipu. There may be other reasons also that I don't know about, but those three, two for Hiranyakashipu, enter into this particular picture. He was not raised as a demon. His father was Kashyapa Muni, and his mother was Diti. She was a demigoddess. Nonetheless, for pastime purposes, he was filled with the mode of passion and ignorance. So now we come to the point in this story where Hiranyakashipu has just asked his little son, five-year-old son, Prahlad, what have you learned at your school? And Prahlad, he tells him, I learned at the school that for persons who have been born with a temporary body and who are in a temporary household life, which is just like a dark well, which is filled with anxiety, like a person in a dark well where there is no water and there is only suffering. So I advise you, my dear king of the demons, that you ought to leave this kingdom and go to the forest and worship Lord Vishnu. Meditate on him. Well, here is Hiranyakashipu, the staunch enemy of Lord Vishnu, the one he has done so much austerity for, to acquire so much power that he would be able to kill Lord Vishnu. This is his goal, this is his yearning, this is his desire. And here his little son is telling him to go to the forest and worship and meditate on Lord Vishnu. Put yourself in Hiranyakashipu's position. Your little five-year-old son tells you, at first when you hear this, it says, somebody must have gotten to his head. Somebody must be trying to brainwash the kid. So therefore, he tells his attendants, you take him to his teachers and make sure he's well protected so that some Vaishnavas don't come in a disguise. Maybe they're coming as little children. And they're giving him this Vaishnava philosophy. He doesn't know that his wife, Kayadu, when she was pregnant with Prahlad, received teachings of Sanatan Dharma from Narada Muni. And that Prahlad Maharaj was in the womb. And he could hear all these teachings. Not only did he hear them, but he imbibed them, he absorbed them. So that when he was born and as he grew up, he came to remember these teachings. And in remembering these teachings, he then wanted to implement them. If you remember something that's beneficial, that's useful, that's helpful, well, you want to use it so that your life can be much better. And so what Prahlad does is that he talks to his father with complete courage. He's not afraid. Now, most little children would never dare to speak the way Prahlad has spoken because they might get whipped, they might get hurt, they might get chastised. But Prahlad Maharaj did not concern himself at all with what outcome would result from his speaking in a rather courageous, outspoken way to his father. He didn't care. His position was, I've told the truth. My father is suffering. He's full of anxiety. Look at him. He gets drunk every night on these foul-smelling liquors. And he doesn't have a moment of peace. The little child was feeling compassion. He was feeling sympathy for his poor dad. He says, go to the forest. Get out of here. So, of course, Hiranyakashipu told his attendants to look after him. Now that takes a lot of courage. These are the qualities. I want to talk a little about the qualities of Prahlad Maharaj, because these are the qualities which lead to perfection and which a person who is perfect in Krishna consciousness has. The one I have already mentioned is courage. He was courageous. He was fearless. He was intrepid. He didn't care what his father would do to him or say to him. And it wasn't a sarcastic type of a disobedience. It was based upon teachings that he had received from Narada Muni. And all he wanted to do was to express the truth and help his father. As time went on, as we will notice, Sanda and Amarka, the teachers, tried to teach Prahlad Maharaj all sorts of materialistic knowledge. And Prahlad Maharaj told them that I can't stand this because it deals with people being good and people being bad. He says, I see everyone as a part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. How can they be bad? It's not a question of good in your materialistic sense. Good and bad in the materialistic sense means that if you give me sense pleasure, you're good. And if you take away my sense pleasure, you're bad. That's the good and bad that is being taught. If anyone threatens your kingdom, bad. If anyone promotes your kingdom or helps your kingdom to flourish, good. So Prahlad Maharaj says, no, I'm not interested in this kind of good and bad. I'm interested in the absolute good. Absolute good is the Supreme Lord. Absolute good is Lord Vishnu. Absolute good is he who is omnipresent, omnipotent, and omniscient. So Prahlad Maharaj had this quality of courage. He had complete faith. In spite of his little, young age, he had faith that the Lord was with him and the Lord was everywhere. He also had hope that he would somehow be able to help his father and help all those who are of a demoniac nature. We know this because later on, when Prahlad is in the school, although his playmates, they want very much to play and in all these different frolicsome, frivolous types of activities. And Prahlad Maharaj says, you're all wasting your time. Death can come at any moment. You're all thinking that you're going to live forever because you're young children and you see that many people die when they're 50, 60, 70, 80. Don't bank on it, he said. You may die tomorrow. You may die in 5 minutes, 10 minutes. As I speak now, somebody is dying. It could be an older person, a younger person, but death is coming. It's always present. So he's saying, don't waste your time. Instead, chant the name of Vishnu. Remember Lord Vishnu. And he began talking about the characteristics of Lord Vishnu, being all omnipresent, omniscient, omnipotent, having all the different opulences, of being most beautiful, most wealthy, most powerful, most famous. I mean, today, 5,000 years after Krishna appeared, millions, actually, it's over 800 million people are still talking about him and worshiping him. So he's very famous, Krishna. He may not be as famous here in this country as he is in many of the eastern countries, but he's quite famous. And he's most renounced. So he taught these little demons and was making them into Vaishnavas. And when the teachers saw that Prahlad was having success in this, although they threatened him, he was fearless. He didn't care. So they figured the best thing to do is take him to his father and let him deal with it. So they took the boy to his father, and father put him on his lap, and he said to Prahlad, "What is the best thing that you have learned from your teachers?" And so what he said, "It's the best thing I've learned from my teachers, hearing about Lord Vishnu, remembering Krishna, serving the lotus feet of the Lord, worshiping the Lord, offering prayers to the Lord, offering practical service to the Lord, having friendly association with God, and surrendering one's body, mind, and words to the Lord, which you should do." Well, when he heard this, he was outraged. A little boy telling that I should surrender to Vishnu, me, the most powerful person in the world, I, who have done all these austerities, these difficulties, these mortifications, to gain the power and the strength and the ability that I have, I should surrender to him when I've done all that to kill him? How dare you talk like this? And he threw the child down on the ground, in spite of the fact that when the child entered, he offered his obeisances to his father. He did not look at his father with hatred, as his father looked at him. He had no hatred. He had only love for his father, and that love manifested in the form of compassion and understanding and sympathy and love. And we know at the end of this pastime that when Lord Vishnu or Nrsingadev asks him to ask for a benediction, ask for a blessing, he says, "Please, my father has insulted you, he's offended you, he's offended me, Vaishnavs, please excuse him. Please enable him to become liberated." So here, a child who had been, let's talk about the atrocities of Hiranyakashipu. He started out with trident, had his attendants shove this trident, the points of it, into the body of Prahlad, but it had no effect because he was protected by the Lord. He threw him off a mountain. It had no effect. Mother Earth just pretty much caught him in her soft arms. There was no breakage of bones or anything like that. He threw him under the hoofs of elephants. Nothing happened. They threw him in the ocean to drown him. Nothing happened. They subjected him to blasting winds, extreme heat, frigid cold, poisonous food. Absolutely nothing had any effect. And when Prahlad Maharaj was being threatened in this unfortunate way, he did not cry out to the Lord, "Please protect me. Please take care of me. Please save me." He didn't do that. He considered that everything that was happening in his life was being orchestrated by the Supreme Lord for some higher purpose, which even he at this point in time could not understand. And so he accepted this as the will of God. Accepting it as the will of God, he simply placed his palms together and in effect said, thy will be done, your will be done. If I say, "Lord, stop it," that would be my will. Well, that would be his will. He didn't want to impose his will over God's will, because he considered God's will is the highest and the best and the most beneficial. So there we learn again how the devotee surrenders. He accepts whatever is favorable for discharging devotional service. He rejects whatever is unfavorable for discharging devotional service. He believes firmly that the Lord will always protect his devotee. Protection to a great devotee like him doesn't mean that you lift me up and take me away someplace else. It doesn't mean that. It means that whatever you impose upon me, O Lord, is good for me because you are all good. That's his conviction. That's his understanding. And that's his love. And he will not veer from this principle, as we see throughout this whole pastime. So, Prahlad is ready to accept all of this. And we find out that at the end, when Lord Nrsingadev comes to protect him, to rescue him, that ultimately his father is completely defeated and the glorification of Lord Vishnu is supreme and is triumphant, and the point is well made that all the restraint that Prahlad Maharaj showed was well taken because ultimately, he was triumphant, and he became the next king of this particular kingdom. So, therefore, we can learn so much from this pastime. There are so many wonderful qualities that Prahlad Maharaj showed. As I have mentioned, he had faith, he had hope, he was charitable to his friends, he was very humble, humblest of the humble, he was very patient. He wasn't yelling to the Lord, please come quickly. He accepted everything patiently. And he was obedient. Obedient to whom? Not to his father. His father he recognized as a demon. He was obedient to Narada Muni and all the instructions he had received from him. That's what he obeyed because that were the instructions of the Supreme Lord. And that's what he was here to do. Which would be in the best interest not only of himself, but of the whole world. So obedience, he manifested courage, he manifested detachment, and he manifested discretion. He manifested all these wonderful qualities of perfection. So he is a perfect example. Srila Prabhupada mentions him again and again and again because of all of these beautiful, glorious, sublime qualities that this little five-year-old boy had, which he imbibed from his spiritual master, and which he would never let go of, and which he was ready to sacrifice his life for if need be. Because to him, life meant simply thinking of Krishna, remembering Krishna, glorifying Krishna, adoring Krishna, never forgetting Krishna, and simply living for Krishna, serving Krishna, and by so doing, becoming one in love with Krishna and going back home, back to Godhead. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Are there any questions or any comments anyone would like to make? Any? Nothing? Sure. Last chance. 2 seconds. Okay. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Srila Bhagavatam Ki Jai.